Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. Amen. No rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. Amen. No rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Oh, not too bad, actually. Last broadcast football game of the year for us next year, tomorrow, actually, as we record this. So I'm excited. Well, that's like officially like a third, roughly, of the way through the school year already. If you base it, I like to base it off the sports season. So you're like roughly quarter, third of the year way done, which is crazy to think about. So yeah, it's kind of cool.
Go ahead, Mike. Oh, is it the last broadcasted game? But it's not the last game, right?
For us to be the last football game, we're gonna be 0-9. So our football team is pretty bad this year. So there's the last game. Thankfully. So then we'll move on to wrestling and basketball season. Wonder where things are better. I also have a free book out currently on Amazon. If you want to read Harvest Moon, it's available till Sunday for free. So go into Amazon, look up JD Oliva Harvest Moon. It's my werewolf book, available for free all week. We've netted like about 2,000 free books this week. It's been pretty awesome.
Sweet. Yeah. Hey, send me, once this is over, send me the link to it and I'll put it in the podcast description.
Oh, sure.
That way when I give it to Rich, it'll be all over like everything cool. That we should have for this episode.
I should have thought of that weeks ago. Yeah, it's a good idea.
So we have like a decent platform to be able to sling those things.
I compartmentalize like too much. I got writer brain. I got teacher brain. I got podcaster brain. It's hard to, I struggle getting them to like work together.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You know what? It's been a great week. One, there was a couple of nights where I was like up all night, which ended up being like, okay. Cause I had like the TV to myself. So
were you up all night or were you up all night?
Up like Ronda Shearer, up like all Shearer. Night, yeah. So I did get through the Fear Street series on Netflix. I highly recommend. Dude. I love them. It's kind of like, you know, I think it's way better than Scream. I will say that.
Really?
Because at first I thought they were trying to go for like Scream, right? Mm-hmm. But it ended up not being like that. Like the opening scene of the first movie of the 1994 movie made it seem like it was going to be kind of a Scream ripoff. I was like, kind of Netflix is doing another ripoff. But it takes some twists and turns, and it's actually like really good. And then by the time you get through the third movie, it was a pretty damn good series, I thought, like a good horror series. And then I think adults, when they think of like R.L. Stine, they naturally think of Goosebumps, which Goosebumps ruled when I was a kid. But you're an adult now; you might not want like kids horror. No, this was made for adults. It's like cursing and different types of content, super bloody, gory. I thought it was great, and I'm surprised that I had never heard of it. I was just kind of like going through Netflix's horror section, and it popped up. I was like, oh, let me check this out. It was like a suggested thing on my Netflix, like you might watch. And so I was like, okay, let me check that out. So that was cool. And then a couple of nights ago, I got through Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. I had never actually seen that before.
All right, Get the button ready. What did you think of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch?
to be quite honest, I actually kind of liked it. So I assumed I was going to hate it. But then once I realized, here's the problem with the movie. It's a Halloween movie that doesn't have Michael Myers, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, but I, like, overall, I was like, it's kind of a cool concept. It kind of reminded me more of They Live versus, a Michael Myers movie. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so once you get past the fact that it doesn't even come across as a horror movie to me. Like, I don't even think it should be in the horror section. To me, I was watching it and I was like, this is not a slasher film. There's no monsters. Like, there's robots, right? Like, there's robots, and that was kind of like it. But by the end of it, I was like, okay, this is kind of a cool movie. I thought, now, would I give it a great rating or anything like that? No, but by the end, was I upset that I watched it? Absolutely not. I was like, oh, this is kind of fun.
So I'm going to tell you a little JD story right now. My grandma passed away in probably 1983-ish. And during the time of her wake and funeral, I was like 3 years old, two, 3 years old. And my cousins babysat me and allowed me to watch this movie on VHS in probably 83, 84, something like that. And it is burned into my brain. This is probably why I'm the way I am. The scene where the kids are watching the TV, the test, and the bugs start coming out of the masks and all that stuff, right? As a little child, this scarred me, right? It tear, like, again, I'm a little kid. I'm younger than Izzy at this time, right? Like, it just fucked me up completely. And I thought it was Halloween. So for years, this movie Halloween was in my brain. And when I was older, I finally sat down to watch the first Halloween. John Carpenter was probably 10, and I what 10, 11 watched Halloween for the first time. And I came out of them and went, what are the fucking kids with the masks?
Yeah.
so confused. I'm like, this is actually a good movie, Halloween. And then I figured out, oh, that's Halloween 3 that messed me up, the Season of the Witch. And then I finally watched it when I was a teenager. And I'll tell you something. I love the concepts of this movie. Yeah. Like the silver shamrock jingle. I have that on my Halloween Spotify playlist. Do, 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 do. Love it. Happy, happy Halloween. It's an earworm. Yeah. Pours in your brain for ever.
Happy, happy Halloween.
Silver shamrock. I adore it. The concept of these druids who are taking Halloween back, and they're just going to fucking kill all the kids in the world to do it. You know, genius. Love that. Couldn't work today because we have more than three channels, but in 1983, great concept. Here's my beef with Halloween 3. It has nothing to do with Michael Myers. I think the execution just kind of sucks. I think the concepts, I think they swing really hard. They're swinging for the fences, but thunderstorm here. But it just doesn't land. You know, it just doesn't land.
I get the feeling it didn't do very well at the box office. Would I be correct in that assumption?
It did not, because people went to the movie and said, where's Michael Myers? The problem, we were talking with Daza about this online, our buddy, Daza, big movie guy. He would like the idea of if Halloween had stayed this idea of an anthology film series. And I agree. The problem is you can't start an anthology film series with 3. Yeah. You've already established with 1 and 2 that they're about Michael Myers. Now in 3, you're going to give us something completely different and then go back to it 4. Michael Myers comes back. It's just, it's this oddball stubbed toe.
Well, they realized probably at the box office, we just thought by putting the name Halloween on this thing that we could probably do pretty well. But no, it wasn't the name. The name Halloween is still big, don't get me wrong. But Michael Myers is the fucking star of the movie.
100%. If they just called the movie Season of the Witch, people probably would have judged it on its own merits a little bit better. And I try to, because again, it's not fair to compare this movie to a Michael Myers movie. It's quite frankly, it's better than a lot of the Michael Myers movies. Most of the Michael Myers movies are fucking terrible.
I really love the original.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty great. I think Halloween 2 is pretty good.
Yeah,
four and five, not interested. I didn't think 4 or 5. And then they came out with one a year or two ago, and I watched it on Peacock, and I thought that was just okay.
Yes, this is a live stream. Sorry.
Yes, Dream Ultra Crazy. Yes, we are live. We are live. Hey, everybody, if you're in the chat or if you're watching this online on YouTube, regardless of if you're on the Voices of Wrestling Network or if you're on the Mike and JD Show Network, give us a thumbs up. Make sure you like this video and then lay down a comment. Help us defeat the algorithm. When you like and comment and subscribe, it actually sends a signal to YouTube. This is, hey, these guys got something going on over here. There's something happening. And you need to make everybody pay attention to it. And then that'll actually draw in more viewers and that'll help us out. So please like, comment, and subscribe. I'd greatly appreciate it.
Dream Key Crazy doesn't like the horror movies. And that's okay, because this is a Voices of Wrestling show where we talk about everything but wrestling at the beginning of the show. And then we get into the wrestling.
Yeah.
So as we're on the topic of Halloween, I have to do this because one of the most fascinating things to me is Halloween continuity, right? Halloween is its own thing. And now it's like the branches spread out from Halloween, because Halloween, then you get the original Halloween 2, Halloween 4, Halloween 5. And then that's the original Halloween continuity, right? Yeah. Then you go to Halloween H2O, which was Halloween 6, which was the original, which Halloween H2O is actually a sequel to Halloween 2. Halloween H2O, the one that came out in like 1998, completely ignores 4 and 5, the Daniel Harris is Michael Myers' little sister movies. Completely forgets those. So Halloween H2O, and then you got the sequel to that, Halloween Resurrection, which, again, great concept. We're going to do a reality TV show in this spooky old haunted house. Oh, shit, Michael Myers is going to kill everybody. But it's a terrible movie, much like Season Witch, terribly executed, right? So then you have the second branch of Halloween continuity, splintered off. Then you had Rob Zombie make his two Halloween movies that both sucked. Don't see them. They're really
sucked bad. Yeah.
Terrible movies. Then David Gordon Green did his. So his Halloween movies that started in 2018 were actually sequels to Halloween 1 that ignore the fact that Jamie Lee Curtis, a.k.a. Laurie Strode, is his sister. So no, these movies are completely different. Michael Myers isn't supernatural. He's just big and strong and scary. Like, so then there's this three continuity spider webs, except for the Rob Zombie. That's his own thing. That sprints off the first movie. Then you have Season of the Witch just hanging out here in the corner, doing its own thing. Never been connected to any of the movies.
Right.
It's wild.
It's the one movie that's like a complete outlier. It is not connected to anything involved in the Michael Myers universe.
Which is weird, because in the Michael Myers movie with Paul Rudd, I think that's 6, 5, I forget, with the Curse of Michael Myers, they tie him into the Druids. I remember watching it the first time going, oh, they're going to bring in Silver Shamrock. No, they didn't. They had the opportunity and didn't, which made it even more weird. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, some remakes I dig. I think that if you got like a really good director and a big studio behind Season of the Witch, I think the concept of that movie could actually play pretty well.
100%.
But just don't call it Halloween.
No, I agree. I think there's enough big concepts in Season of the Witch. And I think now you could do it too with the internet. That might be even more interesting. Like, I would love to see someone try to tackle a Season of the Witch remake, because the nuts and bolts are there for a good movie. They just didn't stick the landing, because they were just cranking those things out. They weren't putting much thought into them, you know, so there wasn't a lot of love in it, but there's some really cool things. Like, I love it's iconic in its own right. It just doesn't stick the landing.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff, guys. We'll get into the wrestling talk here in just a second, but I do have to acknowledge one. I have to address something right off the top. Almost 13 minutes into the show. For those of you wondering and you're watching this online, yes, I have a beard.
Yeah, he's got a Lemmy beard growing there.
Yeah, well, you know, I got sides.
Well, it's coming though. It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming in, but the beard is there. If you saw some of my pictures, well, I'm not gonna add anybody to my Facebook, but if you saw some of my pictures on my Facebook, like, you could tell like there's an actual beard growing there. It's because I'm on paternity leave. I'm not going back to work until December. So it's like, in the military, it's tradition that when you don't have to work, you just stop shaving, because you literally have to be clean shaven every day that you're in your uniform.
I'm amazed that in the year of our Lord 2024, that the American military is still very, for lack of a better term, regimented on facial hair. Like, having never been in the military myself, I'm a pox upon society. We'll just call it that. Tell me, like, why is that, Mike? What is the deal with no facial hair in the military?
Well, you know, it started in the early days of the World Wars, because our enemies started using chemical weapons against us, and you needed to have a gas mask on. Well, gas masks are tight-fitting respirators, And when you have a beard, you can't wear a gas mask because it breaks the seal, thus making yourself vulnerable to a chemical, to a seaborne attack, a chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear attack, right? And so we don't see too many like seaborne type attacks anymore, but they still happen. There are still countries in the world that are actually using chemical and biological and all those types of weapons. So, but we do have a lot of people in the military with, they have like shaving waivers and stuff like that. Some people get really bad skin bumps whenever they shave too close. And then we do have some religious exemptions. So there's a lot of those, but for the most part, like I got no reason to have a beard. I shave just fine. I got no religious exemption. No, nothing like that. But one of the main reasons why we stay, you know, and there's also a part of like, hey, we need to look the same. We all have to be uniform. We need our haircut short, that type of stuff. We need to have standards, which I think is important because you conform to the military. That's important. The military doesn't conform to you. That's the reason, like, that's how it works. That's why it works pretty well. So you need to kind of like give up a part of your identity to join. Sure. And then over time you start to get some of that identity back. So there is a part of that, but like, you know, for the most part, it's like a safety issue. Like if we deploy you to a place where there's going to be a chemical attack, you got to be able to wear a gas mask.
That's absolutely fascinating. I learned something today.
Yeah. Not a lot of people know that. Like I've had people come to my office tests the gas mask, and I've had people come to me with like a full beard and I'll just turn them away. And they're like, I can't have my beard in this gas mask. Like, no, you like, it's going to break the seal. Those chemical vapors are going to go right through that. Like you're not being protected at that point. And I said the same thing during the pandemic with people with, they wanted to wear the N95 mask. And I was like, well, come back when you're clean shaven. I'm not testing you until you're clean shaven. You might as well just not wear one at that point. so they, if you're wearing it for protection from other people, but if you're just putting on a regular paper mask to protect them from you, that's different. But the N95 was for like doctors and nurses and medical technicians, people working closely with patients that had like not only COVID, but influenza and things like that. They would have to wear those things. So I'd make sure to test them. Then there are ways to get around like those type of masks. You can wear powered air purifying respirator, stuff like that. But those are super expensive. We're just not going to issue that to everybody. So we're just like, you just got to fucking shave. Sorry, dude.
It's like NBC, the more you know.
Yeah. A little history lesson of, I mean, there's more than just that as to the reason why we can't have beers, but like, that's one of the main ones.
That's a lot. Like you gave us like four. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, hey man, so, everybody go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Earlier this week, I did a Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling podcast. I just recapped their shows from over the weekend. So check that out. I think it's also already up on YouTube. So, check that out, but it's on the Patreon ad free and everything. And of course my Brace for Impact show from over the weekend is there. Got a bunch of exclusive articles, tons of exclusive content. So please go ahead and check that out. Support the show. I greatly appreciate it. But our top story, man, of the week, you know, it's not the top. I'm going to go to the second top story because I think it's going to lead into the next story. Both of them are interconnected. But over the weekend, Rolling Stone, I want to get the author's name of the article. I think I have it pulled up here. So on Saturday, Rolling Stone published a story by Christy Lee Yandoli detailing allegations from six former WWE writers who accused Vince McMahon of fostering a toxic workplace. The piece reveals that McMahon created a hostile and sexist work environment for writers, with accusations spanning from 2016 to 2022, while most of the writers chose to remain anonymous, citing fear of retribution. So that fear of retribution is not only from the company, but mostly from their fans, their toxic fans. Mm-hmm. One former writer, Michael Leonardi, went on the record to recount an incident where he was actually asked to have Pac, who was Adrian Neville back in the day, recite the Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And he thought that was inappropriate. So he actually changed the script and had R-Truth do it. And Vince McMahon got mad at him and fired him on the spot because of that. So things like that, inappropriate touching, inappropriate work, or inappropriate language and things like that, sexist, all kinds of stuff, abusive. They didn't really name names, but they very much allege that a lot of the people that are part of that toxic work environment are still in place in WWE to this day.
Pritchard.
Bruce Pritchard. I would strongly encourage everybody to go out of the way to read that Rolling Stone article. I thought that she did a great job, and I'm actually compiling some notes and some different things. I'm gonna try to have something out on the Patreon this coming up weekend. You guys are gonna find this interesting. Vince McMahon denies that any of those things actually happened.
Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. They got six different people working there that said that that all this stuff was happening, yet he denies that anything like that ever happened. Rolling Stone report details a much broader pattern of alleged workplace abuse under McMahon's leadership. Former writers described working in an environment where McMahon's unpredictable behavior often felt sadistic. One writer recalled McMahon's habit of repeatedly changing scripts at the last minute, seemingly to create stress rather than improve the show. In quote, "I think Vince enjoyed the manipulation," one writer claimed. "He liked keeping people on their toes. I genuinely felt like this isn't to the benefit of the show or the storyline. Vince really just enjoys making people squirm." The report also notes that some of the toxic behavior extended beyond McMahon to other writers and senior staff, with multiple instances of inappropriate physical contact and sexist comments. Female writers claimed that they were pulled inappropriately by the waist and were often belittled in writers' rooms dominated by male colleagues. Two female writers took their complaints to HR, with one being fired shortly afterwards, further cementing the perception of a retaliatory work culture. That's kind of just some of the notes that I put together. This story even goes on to say that they were actively encouraging people not to go to HR, to say, "Hey, don't go to HR. That's just going to be bad. Just come to us," which is it's inappropriate. And I'll tell you why. Because I had a situation where somebody did want to go to HR, not about me or any of my leadership, but about somebody that they worked with. And they wanted to go to an entity that was kind of like HR. And my comment back was, "Well, please do. Like, if you feel like strongly about it, but can you please let me have an opportunity to take care of the situation before we get to that point?" And they said no. And I said, "Okay, no problem." And there was no retaliation. There was no nothing. In fact, I actively encouraged them and I helped the investigation along. And it was completely independent. And it came back and all the allegations were proven true. Right. So like I have dealt with those things. You never say, "Don't go to HR." You say, you know, you say, "Give me an opportunity to take care of it for you before we get HR involved." But if they do that, you have to be a professional and let them do that. And you can't retaliate. That's completely inappropriate.
I find it funny that Vince McMahon fought so hard to quote unquote sell the company, spun it off really. And then all the stuff comes out about him. You know, it's just, it's weird. It's wildly hilarious that he fought so hard to do this and it wound up being his undoing. Because if, quite frankly, if he was still in charge, nothing would happen.
Yeah.
Right. This isn't the first time, right? This isn't the fifth time that stuff like this. The only difference is now he's out. Right. Yeah. So there's people willing to throw him under the bus. Now we've seen when I worked, the first school job I ever had was I worked at a high school, is where I went to high school. And a lot of the people there that I was working with had very loose moral standards, especially when it came to relationships with the students. And you hear something so much and so frequently that eventually it kind of dulls your senses a little bit. And if you're not a strong enough person, your morals start to slide with that, especially for reasons like you want to fit in, you like where you're at, this is where you've always wanted to be. And I remember one day I heard something and like I found that I wasn't grossed out by it. And the fact that I wasn't grossed out by it made me go, I have to get out of here because this is starting to affect who I am and I don't like that. So, and then when I left, nothing to do with me, but when I left, things started to kind of unravel at a former place of employment. I mean, this is 20 some years ago. So that happens a lot. And it doesn't surprise me because you hear to see this a lot. People who hurt people, right? And people who are abused sometimes become abusive because it becomes part of a culture.
Yeah.
Right. And there's people that fight back against, and we've seen it for years, like, you know, initiations and humiliations. Oh, now you're one of us. And like, you know, we grew up in the 90s, man. Like we did stuff like that all the time in locker rooms. And like, I got wedgies. I wedgied kids. Like I participated in stuff that I'm not proud of now that I'm an adult and I can see how wrong that was. So stuff like this strikes me a little bit because I've tried as a coach to be like, no, we don't do that. We're better than this. Like, and to understand these things. And like, so I hear this and I'm like, I get it because the guy at top fosters poisoned environments. And then weak-willed people who don't know better go along.
Yeah.
Right. And that's been my big thing with this company for a long time, is that people forgive them for a lot of things that they shouldn't.
I think the moral of the story, of this story specifically, by the way, is that Vince McMahon's toxic traits have permeated the entire culture of the company.
The entire business, to be quite frank.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I know a lot of that left when he left, but there's still some people there that were a part of that. And
they need to
kind of root out the rot.
Do you believe that? I know everyone sits there now and goes, bad man gone. Bad man gone.
Yeah, I'm saying the bad man gone thing is bullshit, but I'm saying, you know what I mean? That my point is it's bullshit. Now, while some of the bad stuff has left once he left, right? Like, I think all we're hearing is reports. Now, I know that these people are very much like kind of like getting direct word from, like, it's the gentle activity, mm-hmm. but everything is kind of coming out of like, everybody's happy. So I can't go on here and say, well, it's still happening, when I don't have the stories to back it up just yet. Right. So, but the people that were part of that culture in 2016 to 2022 are still there. The rot mm-hmm. is not gone. It is still there. So I would say it's safe to assume that some of this stuff, maybe not all of it, but some of this stuff is probably still happening.
Oh, I agree 100%. It's like the REM song, Shiny Happy People. That's based on like a Chinese propaganda poster. Like, you know, everything is fine. Everyone's happy. Vince is gone. Like, my favorite thing is Kevin Nash saying, well, yeah, Paul was going to quit if Vince wasn't removed. Shut the fuck up, dude. Like, that guy's been there his whole adult life. Give me a fucking break. That dude doesn't have a fucking spine. Come on.
The reason why he voted Vince back onto the board was so that way he didn't have to quit, like, because he felt like they needed Vince back on the board to be able to sell the company, right? So they brought him in, and then Vince didn't leave the company right away after selling it. He was still a member of it. He was still had his hands in everything, right? It wasn't until recently that he didn't have his hands in everything.
If the Janelle Grant stuff, like Ann Callis has been a warrior on this whole thing. If Ann Callis doesn't push this thing the way it is, Vince would still be there. To pretend like that's not the case is to have your head in the sand and to ignore reality. Like, Vince, let's be honest, Vince survived. It's hard to say worse stuff, but Vince survived equal stuff to this.
Yeah.
Like, you go back and read stuff from the 80s and 90s and 2000s, like, dude's been Teflon for far too long. Now it's convenient to go after an 80-year-old man, you know? So it's just like, I don't buy anybody who works there, quite frankly. I think they all know what they got into, personally.
Even if they're doing things the right way, but I don't want to say that they are, because just on Raw on Monday, you had Carlito make it. Do you see what happened with Carlito on Monday Night Raw?
You think I watched Monday Night Raw? Come on.
No, but the story's been out. You've been off. Yeah, but it's been covered. It's been covered everywhere. So they're doing a backstage segment with Io Sky and Kairi Sane, and they said something to him in Japanese, and then he looks at Adam Pearce. He goes, "Man, I really need to learn Chinese." Mm-hmm. And then they went to something else, right? And it's just like, that bullshit is still going on. That is a dead joke from like the 80s and 90s. The shit it never should have flown, but it definitely doesn't fly anymore. And now they're putting the heat on Carlito, saying it was just an ad lib, but I'm like, you guys aired it. I don't know when it was taped.
That's such crap, man. Yeah. Like, nothing goes on in that company. Like, I don't buy it for a minute, because like, Triple H has had tons of things like that. You people, like,
yeah,
it's garbage. It's absolute garbage. And they throw people under the bus when it's convenient for them, the same way they did when Vince was there. Like,
yeah. Nah. They guess who else they threw under the bus this week? Samantha Irvin. So their ring announcer left the company on Monday, and they put it out that she just told everybody hours before that she was leaving, but they had Lillian Garcia in place already. Like, she was already at the building when the news broke, and she said, we just found out about this. And she's like, no, I told them months ago I was leaving. So, and they already had a replacement. They brought back Lillian Garcia and just kind of kept the show rolling, but they still put it out there that she kind of like making it seem like she burned the company.
Chris LeGentle is one of the worst human beings in the planet. Like, this dude he's Himmler. He's the director of communication, the minister of propaganda. Like, yeah. He's just an awful person. Like, she says months ago, I'm going to leave. Well, okay, we're going to turn our toxic fan base, our I-beasts, our Gareths of the world, to make sure that they crap on this person who coincidentally has a boyfriend who works for the other company. Like,
and boy, they came after her and him. It was wild. Now, you know what's funny is that I made a joke that, like, hey, because I assumed that she was going to AEW. It looks like that's not the case right now. Like right now, that isn't the case. But I assumed that she was coming there. And AEW fans had been trashing her because she's really popular with the WWE fan base, saying, oh, she's fake, she's this, she's that. I happen to think she's great, right? But that's just...
I'm not a fan, personally.
I find her to be, like, in the level of Bruce Buffer and Michael Buffer. Very over-the-top, cheesy, yes, but very effective at what they do, and they make everything seem more important than what it really is. So I felt like she was very good at her job. So I was like, oh, I made the joke that AEW fans are going to start changing their tune. They're all of a sudden going to like Samantha Irvin. So I made that joke, but then people did remind me, like, no, you're getting this all wrong. Like, that's probably going to happen, but these WWE fans are going to make you think that she was never any good. And sure enough, that was the case. Like, she's a traitor. You know, she sold out the WWE to go be with her stupid boyfriend over in AEW, this and that. Like, just some, like, horrendous things they're saying to that poor woman online. It turns out she's just going to go do music.
I mean, good for her. Like, the travel schedule there is still what it is. She doesn't want to be there anymore. She doesn't have to be there anymore. Like, whatever, man. People quit jobs. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. I this whole thing of, like, who you are, it has, like, who you work for has to be who you are, is just so weird. Like, I don't understand it. I don't understand how someone can wrap their entire identity up into work. Yeah. Right? Like, you're not, your value isn't where you work. It's so stupid. Nor should you put your value in others based on where they work. It's so,
yeah.
This is why I'm off Twitter right now. I've really grown to hate it.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. It's a pretty toxic place to be at. But that wasn't, so I would say that bombshell that dropped on Saturday on Rolling Stone was mild compared to the story that came out yesterday. Now, you and I have talked about the Ring Boy scandal before, because this story is not new. But we got to give a shout out to David Bixenspan, who has done extensive research on the topic over the years. So a new lawsuit was just filed. I believe it came out yesterday. It says revelations from the Rolling Stone article came out just days after WWE was hit with a fresh lawsuit related to the Ring Boy scandal of the 1980s. The lawsuit accuses WWE, so TKO. So they're suing TKO, who owns WWE now. Vince McMahon, Linda McMahon, and TKO for failing to protect underage boys who were sexually abused by Mel Phillips, the former ring announcer and ring crew chief for the WWE. The Ring Boy scandal first came to light in 1992 and involved Phillips allegedly preying on young boys who worked backstage as part of the ring crew. According to the lawsuit, Phillips targeted boys from broken homes and subjected them to abuse at wrestling events. David Bixenspan of Rolling Stone, So there's survivors. So there's five John Does that have been added to the lawsuit. So they have not been named, and I hope to God they never get named.
Yeah.
I was talking to BJ Bethel. WWE very likely has the names, and of course it is. And those names are probably going to get leaked to one of their friends in the media. That's probably going to happen. That's what happened with Janelle Grant. Brad Shepard put out the wrong picture, but had the name and actually reported it before the lawsuit actually came out.
There's so many people that will do anything to receive a cheese board. I don't even want to pick on the cheese board guy right now, because it's unfair to pick on people before they've done anything. But there's so many people that want to be in Triple H and Chris LaGentle and Nick Khan's good graces that they will very happily lead people to be slaughtered for them, to be loved by their favorite company.
JD, I'm going to correct you right now. It is open season on that motherfucker cheese board, because I'm going to get to him in a sec.
Oh, I don't even know him. I said I'm off. If he's done something like this, then please,
he has not
castrate the mark.
Yeah, no, he has not yet leaked the names. If anybody's going to do it, it probably would be him, but he has not done that. But he did something else, so we're going to get to in a sec.
We'll get to.
We're going in on that motherfucker.
Keep that. So I'm gonna praise Bix, because I'm friendly with Bix. I've done him and Chris Zellner's show a couple times. I'm a Bix fan. I know Bix can kind of rub people the wrong way sometimes, but I think that it's that ability of him to kind of not let something go. Yeah. Right. If Bix gets something in his craw, he doesn't let it go. It's that personality trait that allows him to be probably the best researcher in, I hate saying in this space, but in terms of guys like us and where we are and where we associate the people we know, like no one is the level of researcher that David Bixenspan is. Like it's remarkable when he gets something in, and this just shows what he can do, and like and he's fearless, man. He'll go after these people, and he does not care. And I will always respect Bix for that specifically. So kudos to him.
Apparently, I rubbed him the wrong way because he blocked me.
I know,
but I can do that though. I can get under people's skin.
I think it's because you're a TNA guy, and he's very not happy with TNA Anthem.
He didn't like Callison Damore because of there was an allegation of harassment there. They got squashed. He feels like they squashed and didn't investigate it thoroughly.
I think I'm not gonna touch it. But this is disgusting. I'm glad the Ring Boy stuff can come to more light, because I don't think a lot of people know. Even in the Vince documentary, it kind of got downplayed how gross it was. How the fact that Vince McMahon hired Mel Phillips back.
Yes, and that's the part I wanted to get into.
Yeah, just quit messing with kids. He knew. Yeah.
So
he knew. Turn a blind eye. Go ahead, Mike. I can go on.
Yeah, yeah. So they apparently knew about this, and it had been reported to them, and so they fired Mel Phillips because they had suspected this. This has all come out in like 1992. Phil Mushnick from the New York Post ran articles on this, and there were several other articles. I know Dave Meltzer had his articles about it, and so did Wade Keller. And it had come out in like different lawsuits and things like that, like that Vince admittedly fired him because they suspected it, but then they hired him back and said, just stay away from kids. Like they actually hired a child predator that they knowingly knew they knew he was a child predator, and they brought him back, and he continued to do the same shit that he was doing before he left. And then once it came out, like everybody knew, then they got rid of him again.
The problem in the time is that the government went after the steroid thing because steroids were the topic du jour of the moment. And like Donahue has this famous episode, and it's got Dave and Billy Graham, superstar, not the preacher, and Vince and Bruno. And like, it becomes so farce. Murray Hodgson is on it, who's a big liar. Like it becomes so farcical.
Yes.
The American public in the early 90s wasn't ready to accept the child sex scandal. They willfully turned their eyes away. It was there. People talked about it, but they focused so much on steroids.
Well, and so Donahue tried to cover it. And, Tom Cole is the only one that's ever been public with it. And he's been named. His brother is a big part of this lawsuit. His brother he's still alive. And I think he has like a YouTube channel and all that stuff. And so his brother's really kind of leading the charge on this deal. But at the time, like Tom Cole and the other kids were still kids, and they were kind of like starstruck and pressured. And I think that, maybe got some gifts and things like that. I think that those kind of stories are out there and got them to kind of stand down on some of this stuff. And Bixenspan said that there was a video the WWE had, but apparently there wasn't enough evidence, conclusive evidence on the video, to run with, so they were never able to prove it. And I think it's because at the time pro wrestling was such like a nothing, like a sleazy nothing thing, that nobody really wanted to spend the resources required to get to the bottom of it. But steroids at the time was sexy. Like that's a sexy story, steroids. The other stuff they didn't really want to get into. But I will credit, I think Donahue and maybe Geraldo, I think they really tried to get after the Ring Boy stuff. But I might be wrong about Geraldo, but I know Donahue specifically, but they just couldn't get anybody to come forward to corroborate the stories.
Geraldo has an impressive interview with Rita Chatterton from the early 90s where you watch it, you can tell that she's being real. Like she's not faking anything. Like it's a disturbing watch. Pro wrestling in the 1990s still has this slant to it, right? Like the generation that Vince kind of reared, like the kids like us, like who grew up, we weren't Hulkamania kids. Those were people older than us. Those were like people in their 50s now. Like we came up kind of as that era was winding down, right? So to our generation, like people our age and a little bit older, pro wrestling, WWE specifically, is part of the cultural fabric. That wasn't true for the previous generation. So like when the boomers would hear about pro wrestling, their whole thing was like, that's fake.
Yeah.
That's just fake. And that's just where their brain goes to. The seedy, scuzzy wrestling business. We grew up with, like, it's the problem is Vince works so hard to make this a family entertainment thing that when this stuff gets revealed to our generation, it's a lot more serious than it was to our parents' generation, because our parents' generation just couldn't wrap their head around the idea that it wasn't real, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like so, us, like, it's far too real.
Yeah, and I didn't learn about any of this stuff until I'm in my 20s, right? So like this is going on when I'm a kid. It's all over, but I'm like in 1992. I'm 9 years old. I'm not watching Donahue. You know what I mean? I'm not watching Geraldo. So I didn't actually find out about it until like years later, and I got like my own apartment and I got the internet, and I'm like, and then I see something about it on a message board and I go down a rabbit hole, and then the videos of the episodes of Donahue are on YouTube. I'm like, what the hell? Like, why is this not a bigger story? But it just kind of got squashed and everybody just moved on. That's been the story of the WWE. They have all these scandals. They don't really, they pay people off. They get people to squash it, and everybody eventually just moves on.
Jimmy Snuka killed someone. Never forget that. Yeah. Jimmy Snuka killed somebody to the point where it was a joke. Like, again, Bix and Chris, listen to Between the Sheets. Like, they will, if you don't know about this stuff, just pick random BTSs and they'll educate you, man. Like, this stuff was known, but people just didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I'd like to get Bix on here one day to kind of pick his brain a little bit.
I could throw that out there. We follow each other.
You would have to. I can't.
I will do that.
Just don't remind him that he blocks me.
I will not do that. I will just say, hey, man, of the work, impressive, would you come on and talk about? Would you mind coming on and talking about? I'll throw that out, that DM out this week.
Yeah.
But God, I hate this story. I hate that.
Yeah.
I
mean, I'm glad that it's a real sleazy story. The Bix's article, everybody go out of the way to check it out. It's available. And if you... like, it's available on Rolling Stone, but yeah, I think you have to like sign up for it. But there's ways around that. I'll just say, like, there's other links out there that have all of it. And then I think people like The Observer did a decent job of aggregating it too. So like for free, so you get like the meat of the story. But I was able to actually read the entire Rolling Stone story. So one more thing I wanted to get into. We talked about Cheese Board. Alfred Kanua from Forbes Magazine. Which is a huge deal.
Does he actually write for the magazine? Does he just write for the website?
I think the website from Forbes. Yes, the website. And he's a contributor. So I don't think he's like a big deal in the Forbes world, but he gets to put that on his resume. And so it sends signals to people reading it. Like, the Forbes is huge, right? And so like, okay, you got this guy representing Forbes. So earlier this week, he put out two videos. One video was demeaning and attacking and trying to discredit Brandon Thurston, right? And saying he's boring and he's like this, he's a shill, he's all this and that. And then hours before the Rolling Stone article come out, he did the same thing to Bix and Span. And they were clearly very coordinated attacks that were preemptive attacks. Then he was sent there by WWE. I don't have any proof of this, right? I'm never going to talk to the guy, so I'm not just going to ask him. But my opinion is that whole thing attacking Thurston and Bix and Span right before those stories are about to break was a preemptive strike by WWE PR using him as like one of their agents or like a surrogate or a fucking dummy to put out videos trying to discredit these guys and demean these guys and say, like, especially with Bix, like, say hurtful things, which is just totally uncalled for. And it was unprovoked as far as I can tell.
Alfred Kanoa is one of the worst human beings on the internet. Like, he's willfully stupid. I don't even know if he's willfully stupid anymore. Like, when he's just posting dumbass like ratings numbers, it's easy just to ignore the guy. He's annoying, but he's stupid.
Yeah.
What's doing this is it takes him to another level. And this is what I'm talking about Chris LeGentil approaching levels of like the minister of propaganda. Because now we're going after people who are bringing up real news and talking about real stories. And like the fact that the WWE is still feels the need to protect themselves and not just keep the bus tossing Vince like they do. Like, the fact that they need to attack people on a personal level especially Brandon Thurston and David Bixenspan. Like, it's disgusting. I mean, it's, and it shows how cowardly the company is and how vile that company is. And like, that tree is poisoned right down to its root. And until it's all purged, until everybody that came up in that toxic environment, and your Uncle Paul in there too, both Pauls, quite frankly, until they're removed, it's a rotten place. It's a rotten place. I know there's wrestlers out there that dream is to headline WrestleMania. They don't care how many raped kids they have to step over to get it. It disgusts me to listen to Mick Foley glowingly talk about Vince McMahon, this guy who worked for Reign, and this man who dedicated his life to helping victims, glowingly praise Vince McMahon. That's because these guys were brainwashed. They came up in this toxic environment. A guy like Bryan Danielson, same thing. Well, just told they just, well, you didn't know him. We talked to, if the Black Mask was real, and I still think he was, quite frankly, I that guy knew too much. Yeah. He would say, you just don't know the guy that I know. Man. Like, and that's how serial killers operate, man. People love criminals when they're in their lives.
Have you, I take it you're, do you even have Netflix at this point?
I do have Netflix. The One Piece is on there, and Andy's a big One Piece fan right now.
Okay. So on Netflix right now, they just released it earlier this week, and I stayed up all night with the kid who just would not go to sleep, and mom was tired, so I was up all night.
Been there.
And I watched the new documentary on the Zodiac Killer.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's very good.
I mean,
it actually names like somebody and essentially like says like this is the guy that did it, right?
Ted Cruz. No.
I honestly was shocked that it ended up not being Ted Cruz. But they actually present new evidence about who it is, and then they talk to the kids that he kind of helped raise and this and that, like the family, and like so it's a spoiler alert. I don't want to give the whole thing away.
So they
actually talked to the kids. It's very much like that. They're like, we loved him. He was our teacher. Like we called him Mr. Allen. He was a high school teacher, right? He took care of us. He took us swimming and boating. He defended us, this and that. And then the same thing with the mom, like the mom, like couldn't even like bring herself to think that maybe he did it. Right. And so like that's what it is. Like these people are so brainwashed. They love him so much. They're not even willing to like it can't enter their mind that he would have done something like that. It's
because
disgusting.
We're poisoned by our own experiences, right? I know a guy who stood trial for rape, and when it happened, I said, he couldn't have done this. Like, it didn't seem right. And he stood trial and he was exonerated, he was found not guilty. But it never even entered my mind that he could have, because this was someone in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and I trusted my friend. Like, was that, and again, he was exonerated. The court of law found him not guilty. So, I mean, like, but at the same time, like, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't there. Like, I was so sure that my friend was getting railroaded, that it was just this, you know, he was turned against him. And like, you know, it was kind of the same time as the Duke Lacrosse thing was happening. So it was like, yeah, look at this, same thing. And again, he's not guilty. But I mean, like, I understand, like, I understand how someone can go, well, clearly this can't, no, you don't know. No, it can't, you know, we're poisoned by our own experiences. But the truth of the matter is everybody's got skeletons in their closet. Everybody's got stuff in their life they're not proud of. Everyone's got stuff in their life they don't want people to see. Right. For some people, it could be like, you know, I got some weird stuff going on in my brain. Other people, it's, I killed somebody. You know what I mean? Like, there's a big chasm.
I've traveled up and down California killing people.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big chasm betwixt those things. But I mean, like, the people in our lives, we think we know them. And in reality, we only know what we're presented with. And that's scary to think you don't know somebody.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted, so I talked about, you know, the new plaintiffs, the John Doe's 1 through 5, possibly getting doxxed. This was my preemptive strike against that happening. I want everybody to make sure that if it does happen, that we come out against the people that are doxxing these victims. I talked to BJ Bethel about it. He feels pretty strongly about it. He thinks that that they might end up getting doxxed. And if anybody's going to do it, it would probably be either Kanua or Brad Shepard. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I hope that they don't. I hope that they don't. But I think it's possible that those names are going to get released and some media are actually going to talk about it in public, and they should not. I don't want to stay on the topic for too long. We're getting close to the end of the show. I do want to cover something else, but let's go to the chat. Our buddy King of the North is back.
Hey, the King. The
King of all Canadians. He hasn't been in the chat in a long time. He says Paul doesn't see color, of course. Yeah.
No, he said he told us all that.
Yeah, he didn't know any better. Okay, it wasn't his fault. Okay, I get it. And then Brian says the Roddy Piper clip is one of the most dark clips you'll ever see talking about Pat Patterson. I think he maybe on one of the like the HBO doc or something. I don't know.
I've never seen the clip he's talking about, actually.
Yeah. Everything Pro Wrestling, a WWE PR crew ran attacks against Meltzer, Bix, and Thurston. Yeah, they sure did.
Dude, Dave has been attacked so many times by so many people. Like, he actively flames it to grow his Twitter following. Not how I would handle that, but that's Dave, man. Dave don't care.
Yeah. So this one, Everything Pro Wrestling says that report breaks my heart. Vince and Linda knew. Linda was part of the cover up. Like, mm-hmm. She was part of, like, during the Donahue show, Tom Cole is in the audience sitting next to Linda and Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Linda, it's like, come on. She's a part of the whole thing, and she's in Trump's cabinet. You know what I mean?
Don't Saint Linda McMahon. She's not a saint.
Yeah. Billy from Philly is here. What's up, Billy? Let's see. Transferring Heat says steroids became illegal in 1990, so that's why it was a bigger story. Yeah, because it was all over sports and bodybuilding, and Hulk Hogan was so popular at the time, and everybody had been alleging that he was on him anyway, so it became a huge deal.
And Lyle Elzado had his cancer that probably had nothing to do with steroids in retrospect, but I mean, he was certainly on all the steroids. So I mean, like he became the face of the anti-steroid agenda. Believe me, steroids aren't good. Don't get me wrong, but the government just puts that's a different show. But the government put so much into the steroid thing, and like, boy, the WWE poisoned that well too. If you don't know a lot about the steroid trial, you should read about that one.
Yeah, or the Lapsed Fan. If you're not like, if you don't want to do a ton of research, the Lapsed Fan did like 40 hours on it.
So, those guys cover, like, they cover material.
Yeah, they are beasts. All right. So Billy from Philly is here, and he says he is pumped for TNA Bound for Glory. So we're gonna go ahead and talk about TNA Bound for Glory. Let me pull up the card. I know most of the card off the top of my head, but we'll go ahead and cover it. Uncle Dave did cover it on Wrestling Observer Radio, but he really covered what the main event was. he didn't actually go through what the matches were going to be. So I at least wanted to give them that, because I don't think I'm going to get to, because Bound for Glory is on Saturday, I don't actually think I'm going to get to like a full preview show. So we'll do that here, because I typically do Brace for Impact on Saturday mornings, but since I'm doing Bound for Glory in the evening and doing a live show, so everybody check out, go if you're a subscriber to this channel, get your notifications on, because I'm going to be going live immediately after Bound for Glory with a brace for Impact. We're going live, and we're going to talk about Bound for Glory 2024. So let's get to the card. So the main event is Nick Nemeth versus Joe Hendry for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. Main event anywhere in the country. With special guest referee Frankie the Future Kazarian, and also JBL is looming large. He's been all over Twitter saying he's going to be there as well. He's been getting involved in Nick Nemeth's matches recently, so JBL? They're adding a layer of intrigue,
like John Bradshaw Layfield.
Yes, he has crossed the line. He is but he's been everywhere, I think. Like, he's been in Game Changer. He's been in OVW, MLW. He's done TNA a couple of times.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think if your kid's having a bat mitzvah or something, you could probably hire him to postmine some people. So, yeah. And to add a layer of intrigue, on the pre-show, they're doing the Call Your Shot Gauntlet, which is like their Money in the Bank. And AEW has their version of that, too. It's also kind of a battle royal. The Christian's got a briefcase now. So TNA's been doing that for a while now. And Kaz is in that.
Do they still give away the bowling trophy for
that? It's a bowling trophy. guys, if you want to hear JD make fun of the bowling trophy and shit all over TNA or Impact, go to our YouTube channel. I just released it a couple days ago. Our Bound for Glory 2021 review, where Moose cashed in his call your shot against Josh Alexander moments after beating Christian Cage. We went live right after that. The audio hasn't been around in a long time because I never put that audio on Patreon. I put the audio on Patreon and the video. Well, it's just audio on YouTube. I released audio on YouTube with like a graphic.
But, I said, were we even doing video at that time? I don't even think we were.
We were not on video at the time. I think every once in a while I did clips, but it was all just audio. But good? We were fucking brutal to that show, dude. It was bad.
I forgot. I have not heard obviously in 3 years. I should go back and listen to that. That's
dude. It was so funny. I wasn't gonna listen. I was like, I found the audio. I was like, you know what? Because I thought it'd be kind of cool, like in the lead up to Bound for Glory, to release some of our old episodes. And so I was like, I found 2021. That was our first Bound for Glory episode. And we were brutal, dude. We were so mad at the ending of that show. It was, dude, you almost quit that night. Like, it was so funny. So I think everybody should go and check it out. It's on YouTube right now and it's on Patreon.
Dude, that's the gimmick of the old Brace for Impact, is JD really doesn't like this show, but he's reviewing it every single week. And
JD hates the show, but he just refuses to quit. And then Taylor Wilde got you to finally
did it, man. Taylor Wilde and Jimmy Jacobs. And then he immediately came to AEW a week after I broke.
Yeah. So JD, I'm not gonna ask you for your predictions because you're not watching the show, but for those watching, they're trying to create doubt. They're trying to create doubt that Kazarian is very likely to win that Call Your Shot Gauntlet bowling trophy. And he's going to be the special referee in the main event. So they're trying to create doubt that they're not going to put the belt on Joe Hendry. I think they're just trying to create anxiety and intrigue into the main event. Add some layers to the story. I think Joe Hendry is going to win it.
Joe Hendry got pretty over about 3 or 4 months ago. Is he still as over as he was then?
He's probably more over, honestly. Yeah, he and Bound for Glory right now, they outsold their biggest like U.S. attended show, which was 2100 in San Antonio. They're already way over that. It's going to be their highest grossing event of the year. It's going to be their largest attended, except for Slammiversary, which they're not going to like. That was like 3500. So they're going to be like probably like right around 25 to 3000 for the show. He's getting crazy pops wherever he goes. I felt bad for Darby Allin, who was at a Seahawks game earlier in the week, and they showed him to the live crowd and nobody knew who he was. But at the Pistons game last night, Joe Hendry and the Hardy Boys were there, and that crowd went crazy. And then they played Joe Hendry's song and people were singing along with it. Like, the guy's just over right now. It's wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I'm going to go Joe Hendry in that one. Co-main event, Jordan Grace versus Masha Slamovich. Considering Jordan Grace is a Fed head now, and she's gonna give up her morals to go work for the Fed. I get the feeling that Masha Slamovich is gonna be winning this match.
Finally, like, I feel like this should have happened like 2 years ago, but yeah, cool.
About well, they did this match 2 years ago.
I remember
and Jordan Grace won.
We talked about it 2 years ago, and I said, why wouldn't they put Masha? Because that's when they were building Masha to be something, and then they just threw the brakes on that. It was weird. Like, they were pushing Masha really hard, and then they just kind of stopped.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. So I think now is Masha's time. So everybody's question, who's asking the question, like, who's going to replace Jordan Grace? Well, it's going to be Masha. And then they'll just sign somebody else to be at the bottom of the card and kind of just move everybody else up. That's kind of what they do. It's like a next man up mentality there. Full Metal Mayhem, in an effort to finally kill Jeff Hardy, we have the Hardy Boys in a ladder match versus Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers versus ABC. Part of me doesn't want to believe that they're going to put, I think putting the Hardys, giving them the belts is probably a good idea, the Hardys. But me personally, I'd kind of like to see ABC get a big spotlight and get a victory over the Hardy Boys in the biggest show of the year. That's kind of where I would like to go with it. I get the feeling that the Hardy Boys are going to end up going over because they're fucking over everywhere they go. It's like Hardy Boys and Joe Hendry everywhere. They're like big time celebrities. I think the end of the show is going to be those three guys with belts, right? Like, they're so popular right now.
I can't see the Hardy Boys not doing it. I really can't.
Yeah. But I just worry about Jeff, because like every time, like last time he was in a ladder match in AEW, he ended up getting a DUI and like we just never saw him again. Like I'm kind of fear for his safety because he's almost 50 and he still wants to do stupid shit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they were gearing up the Hardy Boys to have a big run in AEW, and then Jeff just kind of Jeffed it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff going to Jeff. And then we got, I think is going to be kind of a decent match, Moose versus Mike Santana. They've been really pushing Mike Santana as like going to be one of their top guys. And considering there's going to be a big turnover next year in 2025, a lot of people are leaving, like Speedball and Josh Alexander's probably out the door, and Jonathan Gresham's going to be gone. So I think Mike Santana's kind of primed to be kind of like that number two babyface in the company behind Joe Hendry. And I think him getting a victory over Moose here would actually help with that. So I think the match is going to be pretty good.
I like Santana. I hope he gets that spot. He's been wanting more for a long time, and I hope he gets it.
Dude, this guy is a really good promo.
And, yes.
I didn't get to see the show tonight. I'm going to watch it after we're done here. But they actually filmed a really cool promo in the Bronx. Like they had a guy who said he had a 6K camera. The guy who filmed it, he was bragging, not bragging, but he was like telling the story of the production of it. He took a 6K camera with him over there to do the filming and things like that. And the way they shot it was so cool. And Mike Santana he's just so freaking real. Like the guy just comes off as like a legit, like a badass dude from the Bronx, who has a great backstory, a heart-wrenching story. He's overcome a lot in his life, and I think people are really going to get behind him as a babyface if he's able to kind of get up into a top spot in this promotion or another promotion. So he's one to watch for.
I love him. I don't. It's hard to say AEW missed the boat on him because, like, again, they're so overloaded with talent. It's just, yeah. But I think that I do think he was probably underutilized there as a single. I know Tony had his heart set on those two guys as a tag team, and they wound up hating each other. But yeah. I think Mike Santana's pretty damn good. Good promo, good wrestler. It's good talent.
Yeah. And then, you know, this is a match that is booked for Mike Gilbert. This is the Mike Gilbert match. Josh Alexander versus Steve Maclin. This is going to be a tough one for TNA because if either guy loses, I'm going to be pissed. So, and then if they do a screw job, also going to be pissed. So this is going to be tough because these are like my two favorite guys in the company. Everybody knows that I just absolutely appreciate both guys. You know, Josh Alexander very likely leaving next year. But that doesn't mean he should lose on this occasion. I think they should probably do like a full feud with Maclin. This is the first match and Alexander's the heel. I think Alexander should probably take this one. And then Maclin get the comeuppance in a couple of months. That's where I would go with it. But if they're just going to have Maclin go over, then there's no real reason to continue the feud, and they got nobody else to feud him with. So,
yeah, I agree. I think I was going to say it should be Maclin because he's probably sticking around. But you just made a pretty compelling case why they could probably stretch it out a little bit. And there's no reason to try to write Josh off right now. Yeah. But it probably is time for him to do something else. Like what more does he have to do in TNA? You know,
this heel run, like his heel work, like as a character is very good. It's unfortunate that they turned him heel and he's kind of like letting everybody know, letting the sheets know, like he's gone. Right. And you know, Ibu was on here last week telling us that there's a bidding war kind of going to happen as soon as his contract is up between WWE and AEW. It's not a coincidence that he has that information. Right. Cause he doesn't cover TNA. I think when he does talk about TNA, he kind of does it with like reluctantly. So like he has the info. There's a Alexander's putting this information out there. He's trying to go somewhere else. So now you're TNA. It's like, okay, we have this guy that clearly wants to go. We have him till February. What are we going to do? Well, what they did to Deonna Purrazzo when she started leaking everybody that she was ready to go and that she didn't want to get re-signed. They beat her every month. And that's what they've done with Alexander. Slammiversary, like three pay-per-views in a row, they beat him. They beat him bad. So I get the feeling that's what's going to happen, but in my head, he's you know, been one of their top guys for a long time. I think they should let him go with some dignity, even though he's leaving. So,
I mean, like, it's wrestling. You do the job on the way out. That's just how it is. But I do think they should utilize more. I would like to see an Alexander Maclin feud because I really enjoy both of their work. Yeah. He's really becoming Josh specifically a free agent at the right time. You know, it's easy to see him going over to NXT and rejoining Ethan Page. I could see him doing stuff in the main roster. I could see him going to AEW. I could see a lot for Josh Alexander good time for him, man. Hope things work out.
Yeah. And then we go to this was booked specifically for Dave Meltzer. This is your Oscar bait match of the night. Speedball Mike Bailey versus Vikingo from AAA for the X Division Championship.
A lot of flipping and flopping.
Yeah. Flipping 2.9s, kickouts, all kinds of stuff happening there. Should be a tremendous match. Probably like preemptively, the match is going to start at 4.5 stars, and then they're going to have to lose it from there.
Here comes JD Zanuel. I just don't get Mike Bailey.
You're going to get an angry DM from King of the North, who is a Canadian and loves Mike Bailey. Yeah.
He's so boring to me. Like, your idea of making him like George St. Pierre with the suits and stuff like that would have been the most interesting thing ever done with Speedball Mike Bailey. Instead, he's just what's a speedball? He just kicks and like has no personality. I don't know.
His match with Takeshita over the weekend was fucking incredible.
A good wrestler.
Yeah. He's great in the ring.
There's a lot of good wrestlers. Like there's tons of good. There's so many good wrestlers.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think he's going to be another one of those guys on the AEW roster next year that Tony is not going to be able to book. He's just going to throw him in good matches. and that's just what we're going to get out of Speedball. It's like,
but that's what you do. That's what you do with Speedball. He's not a compelling television character.
I know exactly what to do with Speedball. I pitched it years ago. It's George St. Pierre. Like just copy George St. Pierre. Like that's it.
I know. I mean, it would have been the only interesting you can do with him because, you know, George St. Pierre, say what you want. He didn't have great personality either. Like,
no.
But he's also a bad truck the leaper. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd rather have Josh Alexander, quite frankly.
Yeah. In the King of the North match of the night, PCO versus Mid Cardona, double title match. It's the digital media title and the fucking international championship. So, so there you go. Yeah. PCO is going to win. So, there you go. King of North says Tony can't book him in angles because he can't cut a promo and can't show personality.
Yeah,
that's been the issue in TNA, and that's why everybody's like he needs to get out of TNA so he can be booked better. I'm like, I don't think anybody's ever going to book him better than TNA. He's been in co-mains and mains all like for 3 years, several titles, been in world title matches, had match of the year like 3 years in a row, once with Josh, once with Will Ospreay. And I think his match with Mustafa Ali was very good earlier this year at Slammiversary. Like he co-headlined the biggest show in TNA in a decade in Montreal in front of 3,500 people and got like I think he's been booked pretty well. But he's a hard guy to tell stories with because he can't cut promos. He sounds like a weenie.
Yes, you should go to Noah. Quite frankly, like go to pro wrestling Noah where that stuff doesn't matter. Like
We got, we got Spitfire, which is Jody Threat and Danny Luna taking on Rosemary and her tag team partner, the one, the only, Spooky Chew. The Sleep Demon is here. Rock and roll, Spooky Chew. All right, that's enough of that. Sorry. gotta get my gimmicks in.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit about the match. Spooky Chew's winning. And then there's some pre-show matches, but that is a Bound for Glory in a nutshell. Surprisingly, nobody from the roster has teased any surprises, although Joe Hendry has been tagging Eminem trying to beg him to come to the show because they're in Detroit.
Yeah,
he might as well tag Abraham Lincoln.
I'd have a better chance.
Yeah.
I good for TNA. I'm glad that their fans are super excited and super engaged right now. It seems like the WWE relationship is helping them. You know, I don't know about a ton because they were getting hot kind of before all this stuff started. Hot for TNA, right? Different standards, but it's definitely not hurting them right now. So good for them.
This has been their best year in forever. As far as like at the box office and pay-per-views, they can't get anybody to watch the shows because just nobody has the channel. But every other metric they're in is like way up this year, and so they've done a great job leveraging partnerships and doing all those things.
Speaking of TNA, I haven't listened to your show, so what did you think of the MLP show?
King of the North, chime in on in the comments because I'm curious what you thought of the My Little Pony Wrestling from Canada MLP.
The Brony Show.
Yeah, no, Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling. I thought it was TNA Canada. It's just like, dude. So they had good main events, right? Scott D'Amore can book good main events. So both nights had a good main event. It's Speedball versus Takeshita night one. Night two was Takeshita and Josh Alexander. And Scott D'Amore, no one can book AEW talent beating up on TNA talent better than Scott D'Amore.
He's like, been doing that's it for his years.
Favorite pastime.
It sure so, is.
Yeah. So he did that. So both those main events were really good. I know somebody, Brian, said he thought Takeshita and Josh was boring. I thought it took a while to get going, but once it got going, I thought it was really good. I think Josh Alexander was probably trying to have an Okada match. So the problem was that night before was Takeshita and Speedball, and they were all gas, no brakes, like for fucking 25 minutes. And so, and then Josh was trying to be Canadian strong style, slowed it down a little bit, but then picked it up in like the last 5 to 7 minutes. And I thought it ended up being pretty good. I thought they had two, and then I thought their co-main events, both women's matches, I thought were pretty good both nights. Giselle Shaw versus Mia Yamashita night one, and then night two had Giselle getting big spot in Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, believe it or not. She also got booked to lose against an AEW talent in Athena. So it was a Ring of Honor title match. So, but Scott's got support from AEW, TNA, and New Japan. So that's good. But outside of those talent, he didn't have anybody. Like he's got Aiden Prince and Rohit Raju and all these other cats.
I mean, to be fair though, it's not like the Indies is boiling over with talent right now. Like yeah. You're going to have to build people. And the only way you can build people is to get people to pay attention. The way you do that is just put familiar faces on the shows. That's kind of what happened. That's kind of what indie wrestling was 10 years ago, back when indie wrestling was super awesome. You had a couple people that like, oh yeah, I know who that is. And then you let all these other guys just kind of build and get great. So I don't think the recipe is wrong. It's just going to take some time.
I think it's going to be bigger than an indie. As far as production wise, it was TNA's production.
Looked like it.
Keith Mitchell's the director, mm-hmm. and Kevin Sullivan the producer. Dave Sahadi is there. Yeah. All people that Keith Mitchell left TNA to go to AEW, but Dave Sahadi and Kevin Sullivan were both fired by TNA, so I brought them in. Brought in obviously Callis is on call as the color guy. Mauro Ranallo, play by play guy, and the ring looked like every ring that they've ever used when TNA went to Border City Wrestling to Windsor. The ring ropes were the same. The logos were similar. The way they did the barricades around the ring looked like every TNA show that Scott D'Amore promoted in Windsor. And even had the same audio issues backstage. It looked really good. In fact, you know, on Dynamite a couple nights ago, or last night, they actually showed the closing angle of night two where Ricochet came and saved Takeshita from beating up Josh Alexander, right? They make TNA look like a geek on that show, but that's the way it is. So, Ricochet comes and saves Josh, and I'll be honest, like their production looked better than AEW. It just looked like a nicer show to me. Like the fans were well lit. They were going crazy, but then you cut back to Dynamite and out comes like Camille and, Queen Aminata. And it's like, all you can see is the top of people's heads. It's like dark. And they're in a basketball arena with like 2,500 people, and it just doesn't sound very good. So, like the show, like aesthetically, looked pretty decent. It just looked like a pay per view from TNA, though.
I miss AEW shows where people gave a shit in the crowd. Yeah. Oh well, they're giving us some better stories. AEW, I liked Dynamite last night, so you know, I think things are looking better. I hope.
All right. Well, I did ask King of the North what he thought. He said he liked the opening and closing matches of both nights. That's a Scott D'Amore specialty. Comes out hot with trios matches and multi-person matches in the beginning, and then gives you a big main event. Everything in between is kind of lame. Mm-hmm. He said rest of it was pretty unfortunate. Yeah, so on night one, JD, they had in the co-main event slot, Raj Desi, the Maharaja, Jinder Mahal versus Bully Ray in a tables match. It was. I gotta wait for JD to. I gotta wait for him to put his headphones back on.
Nope, I quit. I quit the show.
It was one of the biggest pieces of shit I've ever seen in my life.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Jinder Mahal versus Bubba was bad. I'm shocked.
Yeah, and then they shot an angle to go to night two where Bully and QT Marshall teamed up to take on Jinder Mahal and Bhupinder Gujar from who used to be in TNA. Yeah. And it was completely brutal, both of it. It was terrible. So, But like I said, like everybody's like, Scott D'Amore is coming for TNA spot. I was like, guys, no, he's not. It's going to be a Canadian super indie. He's going to have decent production, but the booking is going to be kind of meh. And the talent level that he's got, like some of those guys from Border City are pretty good, right? But most of them ain't stars. And I think they're going to find out that outside of Tony Khan and TNA lending talent and New Japan lending talent, because El Fantasma was on the show too, and so was Kushida, it's going to be pretty tough sledding for old Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling to gain a foothold. You muted yourself, JD. Hold on. Unmute yourself.
I don't know how I did that.
Yeah.
Or did my choking gimmick and I muted myself. No, yeah. Scott's good at running shows. Like, he's good at being in the game and getting people out. And, you know, he's good at staying involved. So he'll, I don't know, he's got to find an identity for his company. It's going to take some time. But I don't know if he's coming for TNA's spot. I don't know what, I don't even know how to interpret that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's come with a vengeance. I don't know, like, TNA is actively helping him, and he promoted Bound for Glory on his show. Like, I think they're all fine. Yeah. So, yeah. But anyway, guys, that's going to do it for me. I got a heart out in less than 30 seconds, so I do have to go. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Greatly appreciate it. Like, comment, and subscribe. That's going to do it for us this week. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game.
Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.